Well, February is Black History Month, so we've decided to dig into our archives today for a story on the troubled past of race relations in Prince George. And our story begins here. On April 8th, 1921, Prince George's City Council decides it's time to get tough on crime. Bootleggers are a big problem, Council says, and so are loose characters such as gamblers, gunmen, and drunk drivers. But there's one part of the city the Council wants police to pay special attention to. And what they call this part of the city is an offensive term, so I'm just going to refer to it as Blank Town. The blank is a derogatory word for black people, and if you're familiar with the history of racism in North America, you can probably fill in the rest. So City Council tells the police to clean up Blank Town, and that order is printed on the front pages of the Prince George Citizen and the Prince George Leader, the two major newspapers of the day. The letter gets plenty of attention, but mostly because there's a whole bunch of political back and forth between different police agencies and mayor and council about whose fault it is that there's so much crime. The order to target Blank Town and the people living there, not many people seem to notice that. But one man does. A black man who already has done plenty to advance race relations in North America. And this is the story of Charles Sager.
Yeah, he was a stage manager and apparently quite a good one, but he was also a playwright. And he was also appeared on stage as well.
This is Professor Bethany Holstrom.
I recently got my PhD in theater history from CUNY Graduate Center in New York, and I now teach at LaGuardia Community College as an assistant professor of English.
Bethany's dissertation was on Civil War memories in American theater in the late 1800s.
How the war was reinterpreted, what kind of narratives were told, what stories were validated and which ones weren't.
While researching a chapter on African-American memories of the war, Bethany came across the name Charles Sager.
And there was a short paragraph or two about this pageant he did called The Negro. And I was very interested in it because I've been doing a lot of research on Union veterans staging plays about the war. They were huge endeavors, using not only veterans but other locals to fill out the cast and create these allegorical scenes and whatnot. So it sounded like Charles Sager was doing very much the same thing. There was a core of established actors, from what I can tell. I don't know how long they traveled with him. It seems the cast was quite large. I mean, well into 100 people.
Bethany wasn't able to find out much information about what was actually in the play or about Sager's past, but she did find him a few years later at the Peking Theater in Chicago.
Oh, the Peking Theater was it's considered to be a pretty big deal because it was acknowledged by black theater performers around that time as being the first theater for African Americans in the country.
And in 1906, stage managing the whole thing is Charles Sager.
Oh, when you go to the Peking Theater, you walk in and you meet this very adept and gentlemanly Charles Sager, who's educated and presents himself like, he sounds like he presented himself and seems to have been, according to all accounts, an educated man. Certainly his involvement in the Peking Theater, which aimed to be, you know, the first black theater in the country, and which many regarded as the beginning of black theater in the United States, suggests that he was very committed to Mott's vision of, you know, finding a place for African-American performers professionally in the country. Interesting then that he ended up, especially once he makes his way to Canada, it sounds like, perhaps doing these vaudeville routines and managing some talent, that he ends up a barber. This is fascinating to me.
We get this early story of Sager going up and down the river, I think between here and Quesnel, cutting hair. I'm Dr. Jonathan Swanger. I'm a historian up at UNBC.
Professor Swanger learned about Charles Sager when a student of his at the University of Northern British Columbia came across his story in the local newspaper archives. He's not sure exactly how Sager wound up in Prince George, but he has a pretty good guess as to why.
The early black community in Prince George was by and large drawn first by the various versions of gold rushes that drew people to northern British Columbia. As they drew people, any gold rush is an enormous magnet for humankind. And then others were drawn by the possibilities of a new land and new opportunity. A railway is coming because it seems that he knew about the prospects of railways coming to northern British Columbia, and that if I'm there before the railway, I'll have my foot in the door, and then I'll be a small business person in northern British Columbia.
At first, Sager's floating up and down the river on a barge cutting hair. Then he saves up enough money to open a barber shop. He brings his wife to town. She opens a beauty salon.
They've got public baths there as well. And so it's an eminently respectable business. He's part of Knox United Church, and so he shows up in the church's history as well. And he is, by and large, sort of one of these small businessmen who, for all intents and purposes, is just doing what most small business people in Prince George are doing. They're trying to just get from calendar month to calendar month and make a go of it. He becomes most prominent as a response to a report that is laying the law and order problems in Prince George in 1921 at the feet of the local black community.
Swanger says while there were certainly black people breaking the law at the time, it's not like they were alone. But he also says it wasn't uncommon for authorities to deal with crime by singling out one easily identifiable group and cracking down on them. And this time, it was Prince George's black community. And while most people may not have thought much of targeting people based on the color of their skin, Charles Sager did. This is a man, remember, who had spent the first part of his life carving out a place for African Americans in the wake of a war that helped end slavery in the United States. He had put on one of the biggest all-black plays the country had ever seen and helped run the first professional theater for African Americans in the world. And now he's in a new life in a new country, and he once again sees the specter of racism raising its head. And so he fights back the way he always has, with words.
Sager writes an absolutely brilliant letter to the editor saying this is not the kind of language that we ought to be using if we are going to move forward together and build these communities.
Sager says the use of this language and the targeting of the black community is, quote, a direct challenge to every self-respecting Negro in Prince George and in Canada. It is a vulgar appeal to insult and violence. It demoralizes, debases, and promotes hate and envy, the very ground root of race prejudice.
It's a brilliant letter.
If you'd like to read it, we've posted a copy on our website. It's at cbc.ca/daybreaknorth. So Sager writes this letter, and council seems to back down from using the word, but it doesn't stop them from cleaning up.
A number of African-American women arrested for solicitation and for having illegal liquor available. You get a number of people run out of town quite literally. What the standard practice was is you would charge someone with solicitation for the purposes of selling sex or having open liquor where you're not supposed to have open liquor. And you literally give these people 24 hours to get out of town. And they're just sent downriver.
So the already small black community in Prince George gets even smaller. Jonathan Swanger says there's no evidence Charles Sager was targeted himself, but it doesn't mean he wouldn't see problems.
There's going to be places and spaces in Prince George where a black man, no matter what gifts he brings to the conversation, is not going to be particularly welcome.
Even so, Sager stays and continues to run his barbershop. He also acts in a few amateur plays to rave reviews in the local papers. But eventually, he leaves town too.
He finally gives up the ghost because it seems he's tired of waiting for the railway to come from the Lower Mainland. The East-West line, of course, is built, the Grand Trunk Pacific, but it's the line down to Vancouver that the entrepreneurs of Northern British Columbia and sort of the dreamers and the adventurers were waiting for as part of the key to opening this area up. And it seems that at a certain point, Sager had just had enough.
Sager's wife died in Prince George. By all accounts, her funeral was well attended. And the last mention of Charles Sager is in the Prince George Citizen, January 9th, 1930, announcing he has left the city with many regrets. Neither Jonathan Swanger nor Bethany Holmstrom have been able to find any mention of Sager after the send-off. It's not known if he goes back to Chicago, if he continues to cut hair or returns to the stage, or if he ever marries again. But in these bits and pieces of his history, we find a man who is just trying to make a living as a playwright, as a barber, a businessman. But he was also a man who, when faced with racism and injustice, fought back with words and ideas, arguing for a world where no one is judged by the color of their skin. Charles Sager may not be well known, but you can bet he left his mark. In Chicago, Prince George and the world are more inclusive places because of his willingness to chase his dreams, up and down the river.